On the next Maine Calling, Understanding Ballot Question 1. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Question 1 on the November ballot is a citizens' initiative aiming to stop the CMP corridor, which would bring hydropower electricity from Quebec to Massachusetts through Maine. Both sides say they are on the side of the environment. Question 1 on Maine Calling, Friday, live at 11 and rebroadcast at 7 on Maine Public Radio. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Question 1 on the November ballot is a citizens initiative, and today that's what we're going to talk about. It is aims to, excuse me, my script, it is aims to stop construction of the New England Clean Energy Connect transmission line. My guests today are both on, one is on either side of that question one, Thorne Dickinson with the New England Clean Energy Connect, and the other guest with me today, Nick Bennett with Natural Resources Council of Maine. Call with your question, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Thank you both for joining us today on the program, and so much to talk about, such a complicated issue, so many parts to this program. And let's see, I'm going to start by asking you a question that is probably not the first question you've been asked, but that is whether or not, Thorne and Nick, and I'm going to start with you, Thorne, whether or not this is going to be the final word on this project. Thorne, if this measure passes, if the voters vote yes on one, you are not going to raise the white flag. You are not going to give up. You will fight it in court, right?
Well, really, from the beginning of this project, and, you know, this is obviously a project we're incredibly proud of, to bring new clean energy into Lewiston, Maine, to displace oil and natural gas. We had 10 years ago started laying out this idea in order to put a path together with most of it along an existing corridor on the additional part through a working forest. We studied all the permitting. We laid out a timeline that we thought was going to happen. And there's been a lot of unpredictability in that, I think, particularly when NextEra and the other oil companies that showed up on the site, a lot of the regulatory proceedings went much longer. They were very thorough and very clear. Obviously, those conclusions all pointed to this as a great project for the economy and the environment. But it's hard to predict what the future will hold, but I'm really confident in the conversations I've had with individual people all across Maine who are realizing how important this is for Maine's economy and environment, that the no vote will win November 2nd.
But my question is, if the no vote does not win, and if the yes vote wins, if voters do vote to halt this, you will fight that.
Obviously the company will have to take a look at the options that we have, but I think it would be an incredible tragedy if those clean energy benefits aren't delivered here. And then this is a fight that we're seeing all across the country, you know, from the Biden administration all the way down, the need for new transmission, the need for new renewable energy are really critical. And these projects are going to have to move forward if we're going to make advancements together as a society. But I think even more importantly, you know, I was up in Bingham at 7 o'clock in the morning yesterday. Some of the crews up there had been calling me about their concerns. And I gave a talk to them to try to help them understand where we stand. But, you know, if this referendum passes, those 400 Mainers that are working on this project could lose their job.
Nick Bennett, if the yes does not prevail, if the voters vote no, Natural Resources Council will continue to fight this in other ways as well, already doing it through the regulatory process.
Look, I couldn't disagree more with Thorne. This is a terrible project, all right? NRCM came to this project in 2017 with an open mind. And the reason that we have become such strong opponents of this project and urge people to vote yes on one so strongly is because this project will destroy a huge chunk of Maine's Western Mountains, and it will provide no climate benefits. There is no new generation associated with this project, no new additional generation. That's not a conclusion that I made up. That's a conclusion that the Massachusetts Attorney General came to. That testimony in the Massachusetts DPU proceeding was a key reason that brought the Natural Resources Council of Maine into this issue as an opponent. We also looked at a very similar project that New Hampshire wisely rejected, and the equivalent to Maine's public advocate, the organization in New Hampshire that represents ratepayers, said that that project, if there were no new generation, and Hydro-Quebec and CMP have admitted this in their response to Massachusetts' bid on this, if there were no new generation associated with this project, it would provide no new climate benefits. So that's the fact. There are no climate benefits associated with this project. In terms of whether or not we'll keep fighting after the referendum, there are three cases out there that we are involved in. We are involved in the case about the illegal lease. As you know, the Superior Court Judge Justice Murphy found that CMP's lease across public lands was illegal. And so they have a hole in their project that at this point they can't get through. That case has now been appealed to the Maine Law Court, the Supreme Court in Maine. So that case is going to drag on for a year because we asked to have that case expedited and CMP did not agree. CMP wanted that delay. The other case that we're involved in is in federal court. We have an appeal of, or we have sued the Army Corps of Engineers over their failure to do an EIS. That case is ongoing. So yes, that case will continue. And then there is an appeal of CMP's permit from DEP in front of the Board of Environmental Protection that has also been slow walked. And so that appeal is pending. All of those cases are in process and we will continue with those cases. They're all based on what we believe are CMP and Hydro-Quebec's and in the case of the illegal lease across the land, the state government's violation of the law.
All right, so let's touch on something you just talked about, and this is going to broaden the conversation a little bit. Maine Calling listeners, of course, care a great deal about the environment and a great deal about climate change. Thorn, you believe that hydropower is clean energy because it does not release greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, and that by bringing Hydro-Quebec hydropower into Massachusetts, you are bringing green energy into New England. Here's my question. Does this corridor, and this is what Nick was talking about, bring new clean energy into the system, into the power grid, or does it simply divert it from one place, such as Canada, to another place, Massachusetts? Does it actually help the planet, or does it just help Massachusetts meet its goals?
No, absolutely. It absolutely helps the planet. And all of the comments that we just heard from Nick, and this is a strategy that they use all the time now, is that they make a bunch of points that were addressed in the 3.5-year regulatory process that we went through. The Maine Public Utility, the Maine Department of Environmental Protection, the Department of Energy, and the Army Corps of Engineers have all determined that this will result in significant climate change reductions for the whole region. And I'll just read here what the DOE said. The DOE said on this specific point about this idea of moving energy around, they said that Hydro-Quebec would be able to meet the energy delivery requirements for NECEC with its current and planned incremental supply without diverting hydropower from the areas that would otherwise serve. So this issue has been in a 3.5-year process with, you know, hundreds of thousands of pages of documents from all sides has already been addressed and answered. And that's why there's other environmental groups like the Conservation Law Foundation, the Acadia Center, the Union of Concerned Scientists that all say, we need this project to move forward because it will reduce
So Thorne, can you explain that in very simple language, what that means? How is it possible that energy that's already being generated by putting it through a different transmission line, how that adds to clean energy if it's already being generated anyway?
No, it's a great
explain question. That without using any acronyms.
Okay, I'll do my best. I'm an engineer, but I'll do my best. Essentially, that over the last 15 years, Hydro-Québec added a significant amount of additional capacity. And what they unfortunately weren't able to do is build the transmission to get that power out of Quebec. And as a result, and you can see this, their reservoirs over time slowly filled up. And over the last few years, they've actually had to spill water that they could have run through the turbines and made electricity to displace oil and natural gas. With this line, we'll be able to take that wasted water, run it through the turbines, and displace oil and natural gas, of course, is why NextEra is partnering up with NRCM and others against this project.
Okay. And so, Nick, you're shaking your head. Why do you say that's not true?
Because this is just an absurd argument that CMP is making. All dams spill water. I'm sure most of the listeners on this show have been to a dam in Maine in the spring when the snow is melting and when it's raining. And what do you see when you go to a dam in Maine in the spring? You see water spilling. Why is that water spilling? That water is spilling because you don't build generation to take advantage of the highest flows in a river that happen 1% of the time. And the reason you don't do that is because it's too expensive. Building generation is really expensive. So when you build a dam, you build generation that functions over some sort of median or average flow of the river, because it's more economical to spill sometimes than it is to not run a whole bunch of generation when rivers are running low. And Hydro-Québec has one of the most sophisticated and largest transmission systems in the world. They sell to the Midwest, they sell to New Brunswick, they sell to New York, they sell to Vermont, they even sell to Massachusetts now. They are selling all the energy they can generate right now. The problem for Hydro-Québec is that they're selling it on the spot market for most of those customers, which doesn't pay a lot. And Massachusetts, for its own reasons, is willing to pay more. So this transmission line is to allow Hydro-Québec to get more of its existing generation into Massachusetts at a higher rate than it can get from the Midwest or from New York or from its other customers. It's as simple as that. And the idea that they're spilling and wasting all this energy, the amount of energy, that the water that they spill is entirely dependent on how much rainfall they get. And that varies from year to year.
Let me ask you this, and to Thorne's point, I understand that environmental groups are divided and that others, including the Conservation Law Foundation, have come to a different conclusion. And, you know, I've spoken to many environmentalists over the years who talk about no matter what renewable energy we're talking about, whether we're talking about hydropower, wind power, solar arrays, there are always trade-offs, that it's never easy. And I'm wondering, isn't this a close call?
No, it's not a close call because there's no new generation for this. There were also 46 other bids into the Massachusetts electric program that resulted in this contract, most of which were wind and solar, including, by the way, from NextEra, which CMP constantly brands as a fossil fuel company. NextEra is the largest generator of wind and solar power in the world. Avangrid, which is the parent company of CMP, owns thousands of miles of natural gas pipelines and provides natural gas to customers in New York, New England. The idea that CMP's parent company is not a fossil fuel company is a joke. So this is not a close call. What's happening with this project is that existing electrons that are getting used elsewhere will be shipped to Massachusetts so Hydro-Québec and CMP can reap the profits of extra money that Massachusetts is willing to pay. It's as simple as that. And yes, there are other environmental groups who have taken a position on this that I don't understand. I don't understand why CLF has taken their position. That's something you can ask them. They were very against the Northern Pass project in New Hampshire. And one of the reasons they were against the Northern Pass project in New Hampshire is because they didn't believe it would have climate benefits. I learned this argument about the shell game of Hydro-Quebec from reading Conservation Law Foundation's blogs on Northern Pass, on the project in New Hampshire, before I looked at anything else on this issue.
So and I to don't be clear, the Northern Pass project that you're referring to, if people have not been covering this issue closely, was the first choice of the Massachusetts project, which was rejected by New Hampshire. Thorne Dickinson, I know you want to respond.
I just wanted to say that the same arguments that Nick has just made were made by NRCM and NextEra at all the regulatory proceedings that happened. They were all dismissed. And the conclusion of the Maine Public Utility Commission, the Maine Department of Environmental Protection, and you know, I'll talk about what the real risks are to our area. The DEP says climate change, however, is the single greatest risk to our environment here in the state. And that this project directly addresses that. So Nick could keep saying this over and over again. It doesn't make it true. The question in the end is whether you believe the independent, nonpartisan people that have looked at this issue, listened to Nick's arguments, heard NextEra's arguments, and come to a conclusion. That's really the choice. And let's talk about NextEra. They were just removed from the S&P's Clean Energy Index because of all of the carbon that they emit.
Okay, so listen, this is the kind of weeds I know that our listeners are not interested in. What I want to talk about now is I want to talk about the way the campaign has been talking about the issue of retroactive laws. Thorne, much of the advertising and road signs are not about the corridor at all, but rather about preventing, and I'm using air quotes here, retroactive laws. And for context, I'm going to read something that Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler wrote in today's Political Pulse newsletter. Steve wrote, quote, "Maine legislators could already pass retroactive laws, and they've done so more than 150 times in the past two decades. Doing so requires, in most cases, a majority vote of the legislature and the governor's approval, or absent that, enough lawmaker support to override a gubernatorial veto." So my question to you, Thorne, if you truly believe that the New England Clean Energy Connect Corridor is a terrific project and terrific for the people of Maine, why not just focus your message on that? Question one's about the corridor, after all.
There is advertised about out there about how important this new clean energy is. The benefits are out there. We continue to talk to people that really care about this issue and are out there addressing it. You know, Lewiston, as an example, they'll get $8 million a year of new property taxes. That is a huge, that's a new school for that city, or the ability to reduce a massive amount of property taxes. But from my perspective, you know, this idea of retroactive laws, it's not normal for retroactive laws to target the competition. And for sure, it's not normal for a retroactive law to attack a project that owns all the land, that has gone through all of the permitting processes that it needed to do to show that this was a good project economically, environmentally, and that is actually under construction now. That is not normal.
All right. Well, we do need to take a break. We're going to take listener calls and questions when we come back. We are talking about question one. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the UMaine Alumni Association, inviting you to learn how Black Bear alumni are helping shape Maine's economy at umainealumni.com/impact. And Sweetgrass Farm Winery and Distillery, working with local Maine farmers since 2005. Learn more at sweetgrasswinery.com.
This week on Code Switch, one small tribe goes up against one big museum in a fight over Native American human remains.
We're telling you that your possession of our ancestors is hurting our people.
Then on Life Kit, how to say sorry the right way.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
Terrible.
That's on Code Switch and Life Kit from NPR.
Join us. That's this evening at 8, right here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of The Phantom of the Opera, presented by Friends of the Conchmore Organ at Portland's Merrill Auditorium. Join organist James Kennerly as he brings life, intrigue, and musical accompaniment to the 1925 silent horror film, A live performance is happening on Saturday evening, October 30th, and a pre-recorded on-demand version available now through November 1st. Maine Public members are eligible for 15% off tickets for the live event. For complete details, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the show, we are getting answers to questions about ballot question one, an initiative to ban the construction of high-impact electric transmission lines in the Upper Kennebec region. Joining me, Thorne Dickinson, who is president and CEO of New England Clean Energy Connect, and Nick Bennett, staff scientist with the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Share your comments or questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. And I will let you know that our lines are full. If you're not able to get through, you can try again in a little while. We will start with Brad, who's calling from MIT. Hi, Brad. Go ahead.
Oh, hello. Yeah, I'm a professor of Earth, Atmospheric, and Planetary Sciences, and my current research is focused on the reduction of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, including assessing the emissions from hydropower. I think the most important question about NECEC is what would its impact be on the total reduction of greenhouse gases? And to answer this, we need to use the best available science. And that science has changed a lot since Maine carried out its environmental review. And it's different than what we're being told by Hydro-Québec. So let me give two fast examples. First, Hydro-Québec has always claimed that their reservoirs have no significant methane emissions. And in fact, of March of this year, so 2021, Hydro-Québec scientists published a paper stating that their methane emissions had a higher impact on climate than their CO2 emissions. And a second example is that they claim that the emissions from their new reservoirs decay over a few years. But in 2017, they published data from a new reservoir showing that there's no decay after the first year. So my point is the regulators have not kept up. The Corps is an example. And my question for the speakers is how to handle a situation where the review is done in good faith, but it's behind the rapidly developing science.
I'll start with you, Thorne.
I would just say I don't agree that the regulatory review is behind the time. I sat in every one of these regulatory proceedings. The DEP itself had extensive dialogue on this issue. The PUC did. The Department of Energy and the Army Corps of Engineers reviewed all sorts of research. They even hired their own contractor to look at all that data. I in all respect to the caller, these issues were discussed. They were considered in looking at the overall reduction. The conclusion from all of the regulatory agency, 3 to 3.6 million metric tons of carbon taken out of the atmosphere every year from this project. And that is equivalent to about 700,000 cars off the road.
Nick.
So this is just not true. And Professor Hager is exactly right. And in all of the modeling that was done, looking at the emissions from Hydro-Québec's facilities, the assumption was that the emissions were zero. That's just false. Hydropower never has zero emissions because there's always organic matter at the bottom of rivers that decays and releases CO2, or in some cases, methane. Hydro-Québec has some of the dirtiest reservoirs in the world. And that's because they are very large. They were put into forest that was chopped down or over peatlands, which are high in organic matter, flooded. Hydro-Québec has flooded an area of Quebec the size of New Hampshire, all of which used to be forest, and all of shrub. And all of that organic matter in the soils, all of that organic matter in the trees, is on the bottom of those reservoirs and it's rotting. You can't pick a worse way to do a hydropower project than in terms of having climate emissions than some of these Hydro-Québec mega dams. These are massive dams, nothing like what we have in Maine. And so if you have steeper rivers where there's less organic matter and you flood less forest, you get less in the way of climate emissions. These are some of the worst offenders on the planet, and yet, the federal government, the state governments accepted modeling from CMP and its allies that assumed the emissions from these projects were zero. It's false. It's not zero emission energy.
Thorne, quickly.
Yeah, just quickly, again, these same issues were brought up at the Public Utility Commission. We're getting way into the weeds. They dismissed these studies. Many of these had to do with the Amazon. The area up there is cold and remote. It doesn't have
that same kind of area.
That's just not, Brett, that's just not true.
Okay, we're going to move on. Thank you for your call, Professor. We have an email here from Hank. A question about public safety. I have heard local firefighters in towns near the proposed corridor say they would not be able to provide fire response along the 53 miles of new corridor, which is not served by good roads. Given that Pacific Gas and Electric has been held liable for fires in California created by storms blowing power lines down, who will really put out any fires which happen along the new corridor? Thorne.
Yeah, so people in Maine should be very comfortable. We have thousands of miles of transmission that are already operating safely and working closely with the fire departments. As part of this project, we have already met with every town along the corridor to hear their concerns and hear their thoughts. We think we have a few ideas on how we can continue to help those communities, but we are going to, through the process of construction, continue that dialogue. But overall, those meetings have gone really fantastic.
So if I have a chance to jump in on that, there was a letter sent in by the Maine State Federation of Firefighters strongly opposing this project, saying that it posed an extreme risk of fire and that there simply aren't the resources in this part of the state to fight fires. So the PG&E example is one that's worth worrying about. And 25 towns in Maine voted to oppose or rescind their support for this project. Many of those towns are right along the corridor. And one of the reasons they're opposed to it is because they are greatly concerned about the fire risk. CMP has not done an adequate job of addressing that issue.
All right, let's move on. I'm going to go to Emily, who's calling from Mount Desert Island. Hi, Emily. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is really about the alternatives for New England. It appears that if this doesn't get done, more of the grid is going to run on wind, solar, and natural gas for when the wind and solar aren't working. So don't wind and solar also have impacts in terms of waste and in terms of its emissions profile when the wind and solar is manufactured, those wind turbines and things like that? So aren't we just mincing words? There really are no really, really, you know, emissions-free sources out there. So how is it that this project is not better using existing generation from Canada? Why shouldn't we do that? Because the alternative is to build more generation in New England, which has its own impacts.
Emily, thanks. I'm going to have you go first, Nick.
Okay, so of course, all energy sources have impacts, including wind and solar. What we need to do to fight climate change is build a lot more renewable energy generation, and we need to decrease our use of fossil fuels through energy efficiency. Moving around electrons from existing facilities is not going to help us fight climate change. So yes, we are going to have to build things and they're going to have impacts. You have to look at weighing the impacts versus weighing the benefits. So if you build a wind farm, and most of the proposals that Massachusetts opted against, and Massachusetts has been terrible about building its own wind power. They are the worst NIMBY, you know, they accuse Maine of being NIMBY over this project. What about Cape Wind? What about building onshore wind in Massachusetts? It is best if we build local sources of energy, minimize the transmission lines, benefit from the jobs of constructing solar and wind. Yes, those have impacts. Yes, we have to come to terms with those. But the benefits of adding new generation, solar and wind, are real. The benefits of adding, of moving electrons from existing sources, and Emily's exactly right, that's what this is going to do. Moving electrons from existing sources that are already going, they're already being used, just using them in a different place does not result in an overall reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. We have to build new generation. There's no escaping that.
Thorne.
Yeah, so we have an incredible challenge here as a society in order to try to solve these incredible challenges that we have in front of us. And at some point, we have to find a better way to have a conversation and move forward. This, again, regardless of what Nick says, this has been extensively studied. This project will reduce carbon emissions massively. I also believe we're going to need other sources. And the incredible thing about this project is not only is it bringing clean energy in, but there's a $200 million investment in the transmission system to create massive new opportunities for renewable energy developers. And I've been talking to these developers over these last few months, and they are very concerned about that this could vote yes, because of the unintended consequences associated with their own project development, and it reduces all this transmission investment that if we don't build it, they are going to.
You should ask the solar developers who CMP has slow walked for years and prevented those projects from coming online as they should, and given them false estimates about how much it would cost to build their connections to the grid, causing massive disruption of solar investment in Maine, how they feel about what Thorne just said. CMP has been an adamant enemy of renewable energy in Maine for a very long time. They have fought successfully solar legislation in the Maine legislature for years that NRCM has tried to get passed. And we have failed in the face of CMP, which is a very powerful corporation. Avangrid is a very powerful corporation. Their corporate interests are what matter here. Local renewable energy is an enemy of their corporate interests, and they have done over time a good job of trying to crush it. We need more local energy in Maine. We need more local solar and wind. That's the way we're going to have real climate benefits, not by importing massive electricity from massive destructive hydropower dams in Canada that's already being used elsewhere.
Thorne, I'll give you a chance to respond to that.
I'll just read something that I think is very relevant to this topic, which is a quote. We need to grow our grid somewhere in the ballpark of 3 times, and that is going to require building transmission. And this anti-transmission line fervor is really going to hinder our ability to reach our clean energy goals. Now, that quote was from Sue Ely, who was the attorney that represented NRCM in every one of these proceedings. And what I find really challenging is all the scare tactics that Nick and NRCM and the fossil fuel generation is using against this project that will, from all the regulatory agencies, deliver new incremental clean energy, reduce carbon emissions, and provide massive economic benefits for the state.
All right, we're going to move on. We're going to go to Claudia, who's calling from Georgetown. Hi, Claudia. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I really appreciate the way the environmental impact of the Hydro-Québec Dam has already been addressed. That is my highest concern in any project, the environmental impact. And in addition, all the trees that are going to be cut down for the corridor itself. I hope somebody will address the matter of infringement of Indigenous land rights. I am concerned about the fact that fossil fuel companies seem to be supporting this project and may stand to benefit from it. So across the board, my greatest concern is environmental impact, climate impact, human rights impacts. But in this case especially, I do not see the feasibility of CMP's capacity to handle and manage this additional infrastructure. I've lived in Maine for 5 years now, and I have been appalled by the fragile nature of the power service. It takes a very small weather event to make it go out, and it takes a very long time to get it up and running again. I've lived in upstate New York, upstate Vermont.
Sure, Claudia. I'm going to give that question to Thorne. Yeah. Many people concerned about the impact on, frankly, just on customer service. Can you respond to that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you read the Public Utility Commission report, there are massive improvements in reliability and stability associated with this project. But this high voltage connection, if you look at some of the problems they ran into Texas, it's because they were always relying on their narrow area and didn't have these connections from other regions. So from a reliability perspective, and these the technology that's going on there is cutting edge technology that will help the system have more resiliency. It also will, just because it's avoiding natural gas, there's more diversity in the system. And all of those things lead to a stronger, more resilient energy system that we're going to need for the future to meet our challenges that are upcoming.
Nick.
So look, the reality is that CMP is the only utility in the country that has worse customer satisfaction than PG&E in California. It's the last in the country. That's because they do a terrible job of maintaining the lines that bring power to you and me, the smaller lines. What this is going to do is put in a huge new line through areas that are very hard to access. And it's going to be the number one priority of CMP to maintain that line to go to Massachusetts. This is going to take even more CMP staff away from doing the job that they're supposed to do of keeping those small lines working when the weather gets bad and supplying power to people's homes. CMP can't do its job already. This is going to make that situation worse. Why would we trust CMP with managing a technology, a new technology in the state, and industrialization of this massive scale when they can't even keep the small feeder lines that go to our homes functioning?
We're going to take another quick break. We're speaking about question one on Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Champlain College Online, helping New Englanders prepare for what's next. Champlain.edu/New England.
I'm Callum Borchers. A federal eviction moratorium helped some people avoid homelessness during the pandemic, but that's now expired. We talked with a single mother of three in Phoenix who worked in a warehouse, moved her kids from Airbnbs to hotel rooms, trying to keep her family off the streets. That's next time on Here and Now.
Stay with us for Here and Now. That's coming up today at noon, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Restaurants in Minnesota invested thousands of dollars in outdoor dining during this pandemic, but Minnesota, am I right?
As the patios close, we're definitely going to be feeling it.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Winter is coming. Next time on Marketplace.
And you can join us for Marketplace. That begins this evening at 6:30, right here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're discussing question one on the November ballot. It concerns the plan to transmit hydroelectric power from Quebec through approximately 150 miles of western Maine to Massachusetts. My guest today, Nick Bennett with the Natural Resources Council of Maine, and Thorne Dickinson with the New England Clean Energy Connect. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can try to get through 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on our Facebook page or on Instagram. An email here from Paul says, there are three electric grids in the U.S. Maine and Massachusetts are on the same grid. Any power entering the grid is shared to supply grid demands. Stop disrespecting Massachusetts. We're one country. There are currently four sources of low carbon electric power: hydroelectric, wind, solar, and nuclear. If we address climate change, we need all four. Mainers seem fearful of three of these. And Nick, what is your response to this? We need near-term solutions and we need long-term solutions.
Look, Maine's number one source of renewable energy is hydropower. We have a lot of hydropower in Maine and it's going to stay that way. And hydropower is not a uniform thing. Some hydropower is worse than other hydropower. For example, a very small dam at the mouth of a very important river for Atlantic salmon that generates almost no electricity, that's really bad. That doesn't make sense in terms of the trade-off, because you're killing a lot of fish for almost no electricity. On the flip side, a mega dam that throws indigenous people off their lands and floods huge forest areas that then turn into methane or CO2 and cause large climate emissions, that's not a good answer either. You have to have smart hydropower if you're going to have hydropower. This is not smart hydropower. And we are going to need a lot of wind and solar. The reality is that in Maine, all the good sites for hydropower have been built. We've had hydropower here for hundreds of years. And there aren't a lot of places that we can build new hydropower, if there are any. And so we need to be focusing on local new renewable energy, which is wind and solar. Both wind and solar are much more competitive than new hydro in terms of the economics, and they're much more competitive than new nuclear in terms of the economics. That's why those are the two fastest growing areas of renewable energy, wind and solar.
Okay, I'm going to go to Dick, who's calling from Lymington. Hi, Dick, go ahead.
Hi, I've been very disgusted with the dishonesty of CMP throughout this whole project. You know, they're saying we're not going to have blueberries for our blueberry pie. We're not going to have lobster. The Pemaquid Point Lighthouse is going to be underwater unless CMP builds this corridor. And even the name Clean Energy Connect is highly inaccurate. I mean, it would be much more accurate to call it the Stolen Land Energy Connect. But my specific question for CMP is, what is CMP going to do about getting the land returned to the indigenous people of Quebec, the current indigenous people of Quebec, that was stolen by Quebec to generate this electricity that CMP wants to transmit? What are they going to do to correct that problem?
And Thorne, his is not the only question along these lines.
So I guess there were a few things that were addressed there. What I would say is, look, I've been out there. I've heard some of the complaints about CMP. I think there's things they could have done better. I think they're on the right track going forward. But you don't have to believe CMP. You can believe all of the independent, nonpartisan experts that have come to the conclusion. And again, I'll go back to what the Maine Department of Environmental Protection said about the fact that this climate change is the biggest risk. And they're saying that climate change is already negatively affecting brook trout, and those impacts are going to be worsened. It also threatens the forest habitats for species such as moose, pine marten, and other indicators. And failure to take immediate action, and this is a comment associated with this project, is going to exacerbate those things. So the DEP is telling us that we need to take action on these kind of projects to avoid those massive impacts from climate change that the North Maine woods could experience in the future.
Could I comment actually?
Yes, Nick, go ahead.
A little bit and try to answer the listener's question, because I think he brings up a good point on the dishonesty of CMP. And I want to say two things. First of all, CMP is trying to scare people so much, they actually had a letter go out to many people saying that question one could threaten, if you vote yes on question one, it could threaten people's gun rights. That's how crazy they've gotten, okay? This has nothing to do with gun rights. Why are they sending out letters about gun rights? That's the same thing as saying we're not gonna have blueberry pie if this project isn't built. Climate change is a global problem. It's gotta be tackled globally. There's no one project that's a silver bullet. The second thing is that in the DEP process, we actually tried to get carbon emissions as one of the topics of conversation so we could provide expert witnesses on that. CMP fought us successfully so that we were not allowed to do that. And I'm just going to read to you what their lawyer said. We argued that any project where that's saying their purpose is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, they ought to be prepared to have expert testimony that rebuts that. But in fact, what the lawyers said is, in fact, nowhere has CMP stated that that the project's purpose and need includes greenhouse gas emissions reduction. So even though they're saying in advertising that that's what this is about, in front of Maine's DEP, they say this doesn't have anything to do with greenhouse gas emissions reductions. And it says further, as is evident, this statement of project purpose and need does not include GHG reduction benefits, but simply refers to the delivery of renewable energy from Canada to New England. So here's what CMPN's own lawyer saying: we don't have to discuss greenhouse gas benefits in the DEP permitting process, because you know what? That's not what this project is about. And they were successful. They kept us from having expert witnesses in that supposedly unbiased regulatory process that Thorne keeps referring to.
I'll just say that this letter was due to a very narrow issue on the DEP. Nick knows this. He's misrepresenting the information. These scare tactics that Nick is using, and they're the ones that NextEra are using, leads us to an important question. Why is this? Why is who is funding 97% of the advertising against this project? It's NextEra, Calpine, and Vistra, the three dirtiest polluters in our country. And those
To talk about funding, we also know that much more money is spent on the no side than on the yes side. But what I want to ask about is this gun rights mailing, because other people are asking about this. Sure. What does this have to do with gun rights?
Well, the referendum process that is being abused here for a project that has already gone through all the permitting, carefully through it, and has come to a conclusion and under construction, will lead to all you need is $1.5 million from NextEra to get something on the referendum. And then that same strategy can be by other companies, other competitors, other social activists that want to attack whether it's rights that people have had in the past, healthcare issues. And that slippery slope, I think, is really critical.
Oh, so it's the slippery slope argument. Okay. So, Dick, thank you for your question. I'm going to move on to Laura calling from Eastport. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a part-time resident in Eastport, newly, and I'm building, and I've chosen not to use power poles and go underground and bite the bullet and spend the money because I don't want to cut down the trees, I don't want to have the maintenance, and why has this not been a consideration at all for this?
Yeah, The Maine Department of Environmental Protection actually spent an entire week evaluating all the alternatives associated with the project, different routes, different approaches, overhead versus underground. In the end, they concluded that our approach, our path, was the best one. It was improved throughout the three-year process of the proceeding, but the underground requires a 75-foot cleared corridor. Our new cleared corridor will be 54 feet. And that digging and those concrete vaults would have to go through wetlands, through streams, through other areas where our project has ability to work around them and go over them. And that was the conclusion of the Department of Environmental Protection.
Nick, is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I want to add to that. And I just also want to respond to this idea of you know, this is fossil fuel companies. And somehow we're working unwittingly or stupidly for fossil fuel companies here, because it keeps coming up. First and foremost, CMP did not seriously look at undergrounding. Okay, they looked at that undergrounding along the corridor they proposed. You would never do that. The point of doing undergrounding is to take advantage of existing corridors. Like, where you would do undergrounding would be next to existing roads. And so you wouldn't have to do so much clearing, and it wouldn't all be through wetlands and rivers. And all of the other big projects like this that are DC have big components that are underground. For example, the Vermont project, which would also have brought energy from Hydro-Quebec, all of that went either under Lake Champlain or underground. So the idea that this is somehow impossible is just silly.
So, Nick, I need to stop you. Again, you've mentioned something that many of our listeners may not know. You say the Vermont project, that is an option, correct? That if this does not come through Maine, there is still an option, Thorne, that the electricity could come from Canada under Lake Champlain to Massachusetts.
Well, again, you know, we have a project that has carefully been evaluated, is under construction, and it has the ability at the end of 2023 to reduce 3 to 3.6 million metric tons. Sure, you could try to find other projects to do other things. I think what you will find is that NextEra and the other oil companies, that just like they've done across the country, are going to show up in Vermont and attack this project the same way they have. And it's incredibly frustrating that more people don't know about who is paying against this referendum and the fact that they're doing it in order to protect their own profits and to prevent competition.
So I just have to say here, Thorne, your side of this effort has outspent the people working for Yes by 4 to 1. And that money is coming from Avangrid and it's coming from Hydro-Québec. This is a list of Avangrid's natural gas companies. The Berkshire Gas Company is a subsidiary of Avangrid. 766 miles of natural gas distribution pipeline. The Connecticut Natural Gas Corporation is a subsidiary of Avangrid. 2,000 miles of natural gas distribution pipeline serving 183,000 customers. Maine Natural Gas Corporation, New York State Electric and Gas Corporation, Rochester Gas and Electric Corporation, the Southern Connecticut Gas Company. Those are all subsidiaries of Avangrid, which own CMP. Stop pretending you're not a fossil fuel company. You're a fossil fuel company.
So, gentlemen, well, that's going to be our last word because we're out of time. Not how I wanted to end this program, but I'm hoping that our audience was able to get some understanding of the question on the ballot and some understanding of where they may want to vote on this issue. There is much more reporting on the Maine Public website. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This program will be repeated tonight at 7. Today's program's sound engineer is KG Akimoladun. You can visit mainecalling.org to listen to past programs and sign up for our podcast. I'm Jennifer Brooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.